Okay, I want to share with you what I said. Shabbos Parshas Tzav. This was the Shabbos that immediately followed Purim. So the Pasuk says, Zois Toiras Zevach Hashlomim. These are the laws, this is the law of the Shlomim offering, the peace offering. And the Pasuk goes on to say, Imal Toide Yakrivenu, that if the type of Korban Shlomim that the person is offering is a Korban Toide, is a gratitude offering, then there's certain halachas apply, such as there's first of all a toida offering, a korban toida, is a type of a korban shlamim, and it is brought when a person owes a thank you to the Rabbeinu Shlomim for sparing the person's life. We derive from a pasuk from a kapitel in Tehillim that there are four types of people that are obligated to bring a korban toida. Somebody who goes through the desert and then comes back to civilization intact, or someone who goes through a sickness and is healed, or somebody who is freed from prison, or someone who travels the seas and comes back to dry land intact. Those are arba tzrichim lahoides. These four are obligated to bring a korban toide. And a korban toide is a type of a shlomim. However, it has different halachas than the ordinary korban shlomim. For example, a regular korban shlomim can be eaten for 2 days and one night. A korban toide can only be eaten for 1 day and one night. So the toide begins, Zois Toida Zevach Hashlomim. This is the law of the Korban Shlomim. And instead of the Pasuk immediately going into the halachas of a regular Korban Shlomim, the Torah immediately goes into the halachas of a Korban Toida, explaining what the halachas of a Korban Toida are. We need to understand, why doesn't the Torah first tell us what the halachas of an ordinary Korban Shlomim is, and then tell us what a Korban Toida, what the halachas of the Korban Toida are. In Megillas Esther, Chazal tell us, in Masechtas Megillah, Chazal say, "Mipnei man eschayvu sfeinim shel Yisrael kloya." Why did the Jews deserve this decree of annihilation? And the Gemara answers, "Mipnei shenahenu misudal shel Yisrael rasha," because they went and benefited from the meal of, from the feast of Achashverosh. And because of this, a decree of annihilation was decreed upon Bnei Yisrael. And it's very difficult to understand, because we know how important it is to be in peace with the malchus, with the kingdoms that we live in, with the governments that we live in, that we shouldn't, chas v'shalom, incite them against us. If Klal Yisrael would have boycotted the feast of Achashverosh, it would have been considered a rebellion. It would have been a rebellion against the kingdom that they're living in. Chazal tell us, have a mispal b'shleimah shel malchus, a person should daven that we should be in peace with the kingdom. So not to go would have been a rebellion against the kingdom that we were living under. So what was so terrible about Bnei Yisrael going to the feast? We have to imagine that all the Jewish organizations and of government affairs were telling Bnei Yisrael that they need to go to improve and to maintain the ties that we have with the government. So what was so terrible about Bnei Israel going to the feast of Ahasuerus? Secondly, the pasuk says Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachra. Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman. Also, very difficult. There was no shaila here of Avodah Zarah, according to Pashut Pshat. There was no shaila here of Avodah Zarah. It wasn't bowing down to Avodah Zarah. It was just the bowing down represented subjugating oneself to Haman. And Mordechai, by not bowing down, which clearly it seems there was no halachic issue with bowing down to Haman, it was just a matter of principle that Mordechai didn't want to bow down to Amalek. For that, for his matter of principle, he put the entire Klal Yisrael in jeopardy. He put the entire Klal Yisrael into danger. What right did Mordechai have not to bow down to Haman, to ignore the command of the king, not to bow down to Haman, and to place the entire Klal Yisrael in danger? This should have been a regular case of shalom that we're supposed to try to have with the government that we live in. And take a look what happened. Since Mordechai didn't bow down, a decree was issued against to annihilate the entire Klal Yisrael. Towards the end of the Megillah, the pasuk says that Esther wrote down the entire Megillah, and she sent it around to Bnei Yisrael, and the Megillah is called, in the words of Esther, Divrei Shalom V'Emes. They are words of peace and truth. So we need to understand why the Megillah is called Divrei Shalom V'Emes. Why is it called the words of peace and truth? Which brings me to a pasuk in Zechariah. The pasuk talks about the days of Mashiach. And the pasuk says about the days of Mashiach, ha-emes ve'ha-sholem ahavu, that peace, that truth and peace will love each other. Which indicates that until Mashiach comes, emes and sholem don't love each other. That's very difficult. Why is that? Emes is a good thing. Shalom is a good thing. Why does it seem that until Mashiach's times, Emes and Shalom don't get along? Please put your phones on mute. And Parshas told us on the Pasuk by Yisroitzu to Abonim Bekirbo, the Torah talks about the Rivka's twins kicking around inside of her. Says Rashi brings from Chazal, that Esav and Yaakov were fighting about the inheritance of the two worlds. And they finally came to a compromise that Yaakov would take Olam Haba, and Esav would take Olam Hazeh. Yaakov would take the world to come, and Esav would take this world. And the Sforim have difficulty, the Chidah specifically, how are we, the descendants of Yaakov, able to benefit from this world? This world is the world of Esav. How can we benefit from a world that is not ours? And finally, I'd like to try to understand that we know that Esav, the numerical value of the word Esav, is 376, which is exactly the gematria of Shalom. How can it be that Shalom, which is such a positive midah, why is the Esav the gematria of Shalom? So I'd like to suggest the following. I believe what I'm going to tell you is very, very fundamental to Yiddishkeit and to how we live our lives. Truth is, that emes and shalom, peace, that truth and peace are really almost polar opposites. The Gemara says, Mishanin mipnei ha-shalom, one is allowed to lie for the sake of peace. So, shalom and emes definitely don't necessarily go hand in hand if you're allowed to bend the truth for the sake of peace. If I would be absolutely honest and truthful to everyone and tell them exactly what I think about them, it would probably lead to a lack of peace. But obviously, that's not the right thing to do. We're not supposed to be truthful and tell people exactly what we think of them. We're supposed to bend the truth for the sake of peace. Let's take numerous halachas that we have. For example, the halacha is that one, that when the life of a Jew is in danger, one should desecrate the Shabbos in order to save a Jew's life. If the life of a non-Jew is in danger, we're not supposed to desecrate the Shabbos to save the non-Jew's life. However, said the Chachamim, you should desecrate the Shabbos to save a non-Jew's life because mipnei eva, because it's going to cause animosity if we don't. So, is that emes? No, it's not emes. According to emes, you're only supposed to desecrate the Shabbos to save a Jew's life, not for a non-Jew's life. But for shalom, we desecrate the Shabbos for the sake of shalom, so, and we save a non-Jew's life as well. Right, we have the famous machlokes between Shammai and Hillel. How are you supposed to praise a kala at her wedding? Hillel says, say kala noa v'chasuda, a beautiful and kind kala. And the Shammai says, what? Midvar shaker terchak. Not every kala is noa v'chasuda. How can you say that? You're supposed to distance yourself from shaker. Rather say kala kama shehi, kala however she is. The halacha is like Hillel. Is that emes? No, it's not emes. It's shalom. According to emes, if we were to devote our lives to emes, we would sit and learn in the Beis Medrash all day. We would daven. But we wouldn't be able to make a living. We have to make shalom with our physical side as well. So we have to deviate from the emes in order to make shalom with gashmias. How many things can we think of that for the sake of emes, we should be conducting ourselves a certain way, but for shalom bias, we don't. And it's justified. It's justified to bend the emes for the sake of shalom bias. And then unfortunately, how much emes, how many things do we know where we should be doing? And we're not doing them because we need to make peace with our Yetzirah. That's not so justified. But shalom, it's shalom. It's not emes. So, emes and shalom are almost opposites. It's only at the time of Mashiach, where the pasuk says "Emes v'Hashalem Ahavu," in the time of Mashiach, then Emes and Shalom will be beloved. They will come together as one. We'll no longer have to bend the Emes for the sake of Shalom, because the entire world will want the Emes. So Emes will be Shalom. But until such time, Emes and Shalom are almost opposites. So, this world, Olam Hazeh, is the world of Shalom. It's the world of Esav. Esav is the opposite of Emes. Yaakov never gave away this world to Esav. All Yaakov agreed to was that this world should be the world of Shalom. Esav's world. Yaakov, who is Midas HaEmes, Yaakov, his pasuk says, Titen Emes LeYaakov. Yaakov took Olam Haba. That world is the Olam HaEmes. This world is Alma de Shikra. It's the world of falsehood. It's the world of Shalom. The world of Esav. The world that we need to compromise. We need to compromise the Emes for the sake of Shalom. And we're supposed to do that. We're supposed to compromise the Emes for the sake of Shalom. Yaakov Avinu agreed to this. However, the Avodah of a Yid is, although we are constantly compromising the Emes for the sake of Shalom, we're always bending the Emes for the sake of Shalom, the Avodah of a Yid is never to forget where the Emes lies. And that our bending the Emes for the sake of Shalom is to eventually reach the Emes. What we cannot afford to do is to lose track of the Emes altogether. The problem is that we get so caught up in the world of Shalom that we totally forget about the goal. We totally forget about the Emes. To the point that Emes becomes forgotten. And that's why you'll find that it is those who are most the truth is that all the different factions of Judaism throughout all the generations were different shittas as to how much Emes we can compromise for the sake of Shalom. There were those that leaned further towards the side of Emes and refused to give up on to compromise the Emes for the sake of Shalom, only to a certain degree. They drew the line further to the right. And there were those that held that we have to compromise the Emes more for the sake of Shalom. They drew the line further to the left. And you'll find that the ones that are screaming, Shalom, Shalom, Tikkun Olam, they're all about Shalom. Those are the furthest people from the Emes. And the people that are screaming, Emes, Emes, are usually the people that are furthest from Shalom. But there's a line somewhere. The line has to be drawn somewhere. And it's a very fine line. There is definitely a line that we're not allowed to cross from the from the domain of Emes into the domain of Shalom. And we need Gedolei Yisrael to determine where that line is. And the truth is, this was the cheshbon. This was this is what Bnei Yisrael were doing when they were going to the Feast of Achashverosh. Yes, it's probably not the best place to go. And according to Emes, they all understood that Emes is not to go to the Suda of Achashverosh, but Shalom. You need to be with Shalom with the Malchus that you live in. And they held that this was the appropriate application of Mishanin Mibnei Darkei Shalom. We need to deviate from the Emes. We need to bend the Emes, compromise the Emes, for the sake of Shalom. Mordechai said, absolutely not. This is a line that can't be crossed. At this, the entire reason for the Feast of Achashverosh was that it was 70 years from the prophecy that Bnei Yisrael would go back to Eretz Yisrael and they were still in Golus. Achashverosh was celebrating the exile of Bnei Yisrael. He was celebrating the fact that the prophecy was not fulfilled. How can Klal Yisrael partake in such a feast? He was using the garments, the holy garments of the Kohen Gadol and the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. How can Emes possibly compromise for the sake of Shalom in such a case? A line that Mordechai held cannot be crossed. And this is why, when the next decree came out, that everyone should bow down to Haman, Mordechai held, that since Bnei Yisrael went too far into the domain of Shalom, to the point that Emes was totally forgotten, the Emes needs to be restored. And although Mordechai knew that according to Shalom, he has the right to compromise the Emes and bow down to Haman, he needed to restore the Emes by going to the other extreme and sticking to the Emes and not deviating for the sake of Shalom. This was a direct response to Bnei Yisrael's going to the Feast of Achashverosh. They went into the domain of Shalom and forgetting about the Emes, totally forgetting about the Emes. And he was going to stick to the Emes, restore the Emes, and not compromise the Emes for the sake of Shalom. And so Megillas Esther remains our our roadmap. It remains our directory. Of Shalom V'Emes. Of when we're allowed to deviate for Shalom and when we have to stick to the Emes. And that's why the Megillah is called Divrei Shalom V'Emes. It is the words of Shalom Yamas. That's what the entire Megillah is about. Divrei Shalom Yamas. So on Purim, though, Nechnes Yayin Yotza Soid, Purim is the time where the wine goes in and the secrets come out, it's a time of tremendous emes. Nevertheless, it's a time of tremendous shalom, tremendous ahava, tremendous love. Purim is a yontif of the osid lavoi. It's a yontif of that represents what it's going to be like when Mashiach will come, when emes v'hashalom ahavu. It's a time that we celebrate emes and shalom together, because we have a manual. The manual of Megillas Esther teaches us Divrei Shalom V'Emes, how that a Yid needs to be involved in Shalom but never forget the Emes. And we need to know that there are lines that can never be crossed, and that we have a fine line to walk our entire life between Emes and Shalom. Zevach HaShalomim perhaps means to sacrifice Shalom. It's not a peace offering. It's to sacrifice Shalom. To sacrifice, there are times that we have to sacrifice Shalom for the sake of Emes. And that is in the times that we have these awakenings from above, when our lives are shaken to the core, because we find ourselves in a place of danger. And we realize that all of Olam Hazeh is a life of falsehood, and it's a life of nothingness. And really counts as emes. And what a Yid brings then is a korban toide. A korban toide comes from the word, instead of meaning thanks, it means to be moida al ha-emes, to admit to the truth. When there's a zevach hashlamim, when we're prepared to sacrifice the peace, then there's imal toida yakrivenu. Then we're willing to be moida to the emes. And that's why you'll find that the word zevach hashlamim is the same gematria as emes. When you sacrifice shalom, you'll find emes. But that's also not true. Zevach HaShlamim is not exactly the gematria of emes. It's one off. And that's because you have to bend the emes for the sake of shalom. So the Eibishter help that we should be zeiche to constantly seek the emes, and to compromise the emes for the sake of shalom when we need to, with the emes in mind. And in the schus of never forgetting the emes, we should be zeichet to the time of our emes v'ashalom ahavu, to the world, to the olam ha-emes. V'vias Mashiach tzidkenu v'mheiru v'yameinu amein.